Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here. We are spending another week in the discussion of the Jews coming out of Basra, out of Edom, from Petra, up into Jerusalem with the return of Christ. I got a bunch of verses we're going to look at today to go through here. But first, I want to show you this in review. If you look on the back page, this is kind of setting the stage for it. You've got the Dead Sea. Well, I'm going to move the Dead Sea up a little bit here. You've got the Dead Sea, and there's Jordan River going up to the Sea of Galilee. Here's Jericho, for example. It's very low right here. Rises up into the mountains of Jerusalem. The up here would be the Valley of Megiddo, or Jezreel Valley. Mount Carmel is here. The trade routes would come across here. This is where the armies of the nations will meet in the Har Megiddo. Megiddo is a city right about here. It's a tell, it's a hill, so it's a har. So Har Megiddo, you know, Armageddon is how we translate it. It's the Jezreel Valley. They appear to meet there to then march on Jerusalem because the Antichrist has set up his kingdom in, or set up and taken over the Temple Mount. But one of the conflicts, as I put this together, is, are the nations attacking the Antichrist stronghold here in Jerusalem? He's come in there, but when Jesus returns, the Jews are going to flee out of here to their safety, and it says half the city will be taken into exile, and so there's Jews yet in that city in the very moments. So it appears the nations are either gathering here to march on the Antichrist in Jerusalem, or the nations are gathering here with the Antichrist to march on Jerusalem. Now, we know that the Antichrist has had conflicts, as we go through the book of Daniel, with the king of the south, the king of the north, but those seem to be battles that are taking place during the 70th week, or the final 7 years, that the Antichrist, by the time it's over, has now got world dominion, and the only people he can't take is Jerusalem. So I'm going to think the battle that, you know, he's fought the king of the south, he fights the king of the north, and he's facing all these nations, and he sets up a stronghold here in Jerusalem. That's taking place during the 70th week. Here, it seems the Jews still now have a stronghold in Jerusalem, and the nations all gather there with the Antichrist to march here on Jerusalem. Either way you divide that, they're approaching Jerusalem, there's a final stand, a final battle here in Jerusalem. Now, we have the return of the Lord. And I think we should do this right now. I've got like three things going on. I'm trying to figure out how to put this together. Go to page 7. We do have clear references to the second coming. Now, in our understanding, and again, I'm not saying it's not correct, but we're going to add some depth to it potentially. Again, you need to keep thinking and process this. Jesus is going to appear in the sky. He's going to come like in glory. It's going to be like lightning from the east to the west. He's going to end up on the Mount of Olives. He's going to end up in the Kidron Valley. He's going to end up on a throne in glory in Jerusalem. But he's also striding out of Edom, out of Basra, in glory. He defeats the Antichrist with his glorious appearing, destroys the Antichrist. So, I mean, is the picture, sometimes in my Sunday school mind, the Antichrist is out mowing his yard, and Jesus appears in the sky, and he melts like the Wicked Witch of the West. Ah, and he melts. I'm melting, you know, because his glorious appearing destroyed him. So is it, you know, a physical thing where he appears and the Antichrist vaporizes, or the glorious appearing of Jesus Christ as he marches in destroys the Antichrist on his approach? Somewhere between the melting of the Wicked Witch and, you know, the Antichrist and Jesus doing hand-to-hand combat on the Temple Mount, it's somewhere in between those two, if you understand what I'm saying. Now, here are our safe verses about the return of Jesus Christ. So anything I say today, as I try to put this together, has to fit with these verses. But it may mean looking at these verses a little bit different than, you know, the Antichrist just melting like the Wicked Witch of the West. Is it the West or the East? West? Okay, it's been a long time. I know there's a pair of shoes, some Nike Jordans or something in there that were special. I don't know what it was. Okay, no. Okay, Matthew 24, verse 29. I've got all these verses written out. I'd like to have us use our Bibles, but I've got them written out so we can move quickly. They're all in the English Standard Version. Okay, here it is, Matthew 24, page 7. the second coming. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from the heaven, and the powers of the heaven will be shaken. Okay, now that can be just Jesus appearing in the atmosphere, and not the stars in the whole universe melting, but just being blocked out because his glory is great. Just like I can't see the stars right now because the sun's glory. Well, when Jesus appears, you'll see Jesus' glory, but the sun's not even shining. Just like the stars aren't even shining right now. But that's because they're still there. The glory is greater of the sun. Then will appear in heaven the sign of the Son of Man. And Jesus referred to this talking to the chief priests also. And then all the tribes of the earth will mourn when they see this. And we saw that at the sixth seal when he appears and they all go into hiding. Hide us from him who sits on the throne and the wrath of the Lamb. So this doesn't necessarily have to be at the very last moment as much as it could be when he makes his appearance in the atmosphere during the 70th week, possibly at the sixth seal. So keep that in mind. And then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And that can be, that doesn't need to just be like a bolt of lightning coming down to the Temple Mount. It's like, oh, there he is, boom, it's over. It can be, here he is. He's now comes the campaign of, in a sense, Armageddon, of now he's marching from heaven down to Edom up to Jerusalem. It doesn't mean it has to happen instantly. It can be this process of him, and we're going to see it possibly. And he will send out his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they'll gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the heavens to the other. Now again, that can be the last moments, or that can even be possibly the rapture of meeting in the air, the Jews being sealed. That can be interpreted as we go. Acts chapter 1, another great verse we have to stay in context with. And when he had said these things, he's been resurrected, he's now talking to his disciples, he goes out to the Mount of Olives. As he said these things, and as they were looking on, they're looking at him physically, the physical resurrected Jesus, he was lifted up and a cloud took him out of their sight. So he lifts up and goes into a cloud, not necessarily a weather cloud, as much as the glory cloud, you know, the presence of God, a Shekinah glory, the theophany, that took him out of their sight. And while they were gazing into heaven as he went, behold, two men stood by them in white robes and said, now we know these two men are not men, they're angels, but they appear as men. So it's safe to say they're men, they look like men, but they're actually angels. Two men stood by them in white robes and says, men of Galilee, why do you stand looking into heaven? This Jesus who was taken up from you into heaven will come in the same way as you saw him go into heaven. That's huge. He was physically standing here. He physically rose and disappeared. He's going to do just the reverse. He's going to appear physically and come back physically and stand on the earth. We know in Zechariah he will stand, his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives, okay? Now, does that mean he's going to come down? It's just a reverse operation where he comes down and lands on the Mount of Olives? I've taught that. That's what I like to stick with. But what do you do with all these verses of him coming from Edom? Does he come here, go down, come back up? Or does he come down here, up here in the sky, come down here, rescue Israel, and march, and then stand on the Mount of Olives again? And that's kind of where I'm going with it right now. But nonetheless, whatever I say has to fit in that verse. Big verse, Revelation 19, one of the final chapters in Revelation. It's 19, 1 through 19, but we're just reading verses 11 through 21 right here. Then I saw, John says, I saw heaven opened, and behold, a white horse. The one sitting on it is called Faithful and True. So he sees now, I think everything we've read in Matthew and in Acts, he sees heaven open, and he sees the sign of the Son of Man, and he sees him now on a white horse. So he's coming back on a white horse. And in righteousness, he judges and makes war. He's not coming in peace. He's coming in war. His eyes are like a flame of fire, and on his head are many diadems. And there's going to be Stephanos and diadems. Stephanos is a crown. It means the victor's crown. You got a Stephanos when you won the race, or you had a wrestling match or something, and you got the wreath. The congratulations, you won the trophy. That's a Stephanos. We will receive Stephanos depending on our life, you know, how we lived. You'll receive a crown, a Stephanos. You've won that. You've earned that. We don't earn our salvation, but we do work on our maturity and the production of good works because of the grace of God, and we will be rewarded for what we produce. Okay, that's a Stephanos. A diadem is something you receive because you are the, for example, the heir of the king. This is your kingdom. This is rightfully yours. It's part of an inheritance. And so he's got Stephanos, you know, the victor's crown, but these are diadems, meaning he is the just rightful ruler of all these kingdoms, whatever they represent. And he has a name written that no one knows but he himself. He is clothed in a robe dipped in blood. Now notice his robe is already dipped in blood right here. Now that blood is not the blood from the cross. Again, that could be. That's a good thought. Well, it must be, you know, his sacrificial blood. This is the blood, apparently, we're going to make more evidence of this, of the war. He judges and makes war. And he's coming from Edom. Isaiah says, why are your blood splattered like you've been crushing grapes? He says, well, I've fought the battle. I've crushed the nations, and my garments are splattered with blood. So Isaiah describes, if this is the same context, Isaiah describes what that blood is. It's the blood of the nations. Dipped in blood, and the name by which he is called is the Word of God. And the armies of heaven, arrayed in fine linen, white and pure, are following him on white horses. Now, the armies of heaven can be angels, like the Holy Ones coming back with him. That can be angels. He's the Lord of hosts. That's an Old Testament. The Lord of hosts, Lord of armies. And the Lord of armies that he's in charge of is the Lord of the military, the heavenly military angelic host. He's leading that military all the time throughout history. But in this case, he's also going to be returning with his saints. And this could be very easily, because when you describe it, and the armies of heaven, and now they're described, arrayed in fine linen. Now that seems to be more on the purification side, like they've now been purified. Now it can refer to angels. Angels will have fine linen. White and pure. Again, you could describe an angel that way, but pretty much they're described as the Lord's angels and those that have rebelled. But these, it's identifying the fine linen, white and pure, were following him. And now, again, that gives the idea of the sheep following the shepherd. We follow the Lord. The angels, of course, follow him, but they're more sent. They're more in a sense of go off and obey him. They're on their own missions that he sends them on. So this can be angels. But I'm really going to say here, this seems more to be the believers coming back with him. Again, that's I want to say at this point, you can debate that. There's probably better evidence as you go through. And the armies of heaven, arrayed in fine linen, white and pure, were following him on white horses. From his mouth comes a sharp sword with which to strike down the nations. Again, a good point. He's coming back to fight the nations. He hasn't fought them, or he's got his blood, his garments are scattered, splattered, but he's still fighting the nations. So you've got his garments are stained with blood, maybe from battle, but he's also got a sword coming out of his mouth to continue fighting the nations. So it's not just this, I mean, it gives you room for more than just a bolt of lightning and everyone falls down and melts and he's now the king. It's he comes back and is in the process of destroying the nations. Okay, again, more like a campaign, a military campaign. From his mouth comes a sharp sword with which to strike down the nations, and he will rule them with a rod of iron. He will tread the winepress of the fury of the wrath of God Almighty. Remember in Revelation last week, we saw the harvest of the grain and the harvest of the grapes. The harvest of the grain seemed to be the harvesting of people into the kingdom. The crop is ripe and they were brought into the kingdom. The harvesting of the grapes was clearly the wrath of God of crushing them. That's a continuous representation of, and that's here again in Revelation. On his robe and on his thigh, he has a name written, King of Kings, Lord of Lords. Then I saw an angel standing in the sun with a loud voice. He called to all the birds that fly directly overhead, come, gather for the great supper of God to eat the flesh of kings, the flesh of captains, the flesh of mighty men, the flesh of horses and their riders, and the flesh of all men, both free and slave, both small and great. In other words, anyone who is in rebellion towards the Lord, if it be a slave, if it be the horse of a soldier, or if it be one of the kings, they're going to be slaughtered, and there's going to be so many carcasses that they're bringing in scavenger birds to eat. And again, this is a theme we're going to see several times, that we got to eat this mess up. And so the birds are coming because, get ready, in a sense, it's the process has begun, but it's going to continue to get worse. We're going to need these birds to come in, and they're coming from all around the world to eat, to cleanse the earth of this flesh of these people that have fallen. And who's slaying them? For sure, it's the Lord. Now, how much help does he have? In Isaiah, it says, there's no one to help me, probably referring to the nations. No one came to his support. There's no Christian nation waiting for him to return. But it does seem that as we go into these verses, there is going to be some hand-to-hand combat going on with the Jews themselves helping along, and the armies of heaven are following him. Are we just there just like cheerleaders, or are we engaged in it? Again, there's that question, how we're watching him. He's clearly slaughtering the nations, and there's clearly birds coming in to eat these physical bodies, the blood, the flesh. So, I mean, this is real-time military destruction. How much are we involved in it? That's worth discussing. We're definitely watching it. Both free and slaves, small and great, and I saw the beast and the kings of the earth with their armies gathered to make war against him who was sitting on the horse. And so they've met here in Megiddo, the Jezreel Valley. They've marched on Jerusalem, but now with his return, I'm going to say he's in Edom, and he's coming up this way. It's like, oh my gosh, now their focus is not on the city, but now they're fighting him. Again, we're trying to keep this all in line. And the armies gathered to make war against him, who was sitting on the horse, and against his army. Okay, see, they're fighting his army. Now, that could be an angelic army, or that could be the Jews that are fighting with him. We see that in Zechariah, or the army that came back from heaven in their white garments. I mean, which got all cleaned up, and now we're going to get all bloody again. And the beast was captured, and with the false prophet, who was in the presence, in his presence, had done the signs which had deceived those who had received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped its image. These two were thrown alive into the lake of fire that burns with sulfur. Now, again, this is important. I can't nail this down exactly, except I'm not sure if these two beings are fully human. The beast and the Antichrist are not killed. They are not killed. They are captured, and they're not sent down, they're not judged, they're just captured and thrown, it says right here, alive into the lake of fire. Now, if we go through the eschatology, people are going to be removed, and then at the end of the 1,000 years, they're going to be released from Hades, or released, and they're going to stand before the Lord for the final judgment, and then they're going to be cast into the lake of fire. The Antichrist and the false prophet, even Satan, is going to be captured and locked up in chains to be released at the end of the 1,000 years. These two are not human. They don't go to with the humans. They're not angelic like Satan, where they're going to be locked up. They are captured and thrown directly into the lake of fire. There's no judgment. There's no, you know, temporary holding place. Just interesting. Just an interesting verse. The two of them were thrown alive. So, meaning they're not even killed, they're just captured into the lake of fire that burns with sulfur. And again, that is clearly the final judgment place, because eventually death and Hades will be thrown into the lake of fire. So everything is eventually going to be in the lake of fire, including Satan, Hades, death, all the unbelievers. But they don't necessarily go there directly. They go to a place waiting for judgment. These go right there. Okay, that's way off subject, but it's interesting. And the rest were slain by the sword. See, the rest, their military, the rest of their people, their kings, their servants, their slaves, were slain by the sword that came from the mouth of him who was sitting on the horse, and all the birds were gorged with their flesh. So those people would die. You go, okay, chapter, just Jude, point 5, Jude 14 through 16, it was also about these, again, that's talking about the false teachers in the book of Jude, that Enoch, the seventh from Adam, prophesied, saying, behold, the Lord comes with, this is a prophecy from the book of Enoch, quoted by Jude, and here's the context. Behold, the Lord comes with 10,000s of his holy ones. Okay, 10,000s of his holy ones are those people, believers in their, you know, in getting ready for the resurrection or in their resurrected state, or are those angels, okay? People go either way with that. To execute, behold, the Lord comes with 10,000s of his holy ones to execute judgment on all and to convict all the ungodly of all their deeds of ungodliness that they have committed in such an ungodly way and of all the harsh things that ungodly sinners have spoken against him. These are grumblers, malcontents, followers of their own sinful natures. They are loud-mouthed boasters showing favoritism to gain advantage. So okay, that's, again, Enoch, recorded by Jude, who is the Lord's physical brother. It's Jesus, James, and Jude. And so anyway, there's that reference again. Ezekiel got a long verse right there. We could look at that. I want to keep moving. An important one I want to make sure we stay in context with is point 7, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 8. For the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. Only he who now restrains it will do so until he is taken out of the way. Now, again, we've talked about that. The mystery of lawlessness, the mystery of the Antichrist is already swirling, trying to form. Something's holding it back, if it be the church, if it be the Spirit of God, if it be Michael, if it be some other force holding it back, maybe the truth. And then eventually the truth is taken out of the way. Michael is taken out of the way. The church is taken out of the way. This other, whatever it is, something is removed. A lot of people think it's Michael, is removed, is taken out of the way. And then the lawless one, that's the Antichrist, who's been trying to form since the days of the New Testament, the lawless one will be revealed. He'll be seen. Whom the Lord Jesus will kill with the breath of his mouth and bring to nothing by the appearance of his coming. Now, you see, now watch how fast that moves. You say, well, you see, Jesus is going to come back and he's just going to become nothing. Right, but you've moved from the days that it's forming to something being taken out of the way to it manifesting to Jesus coming and removing it. All, I mean, that's 2,000 years of process right there. And so to say, well, look, he just appears and he disappears. Well, that's to say these last 2,000 years were just like, he's getting ready to form, now he's there, now he's gone. It's like, well, no, he's been forming for 2,000 years, and when he does appear, he's not just going to appear. He's going to appear and rule the world, kill Christians, have a throne, have a prophet doing signs and wonders with him for, you know, 7 years, 3.5 years, and then now his demise is going to be, well, not just, boom, Jesus came back and he's gone. It may be a reversal of a process. Again, fairly quickly compared to 2,000 years. But again, you don't have to say, I mean, because that's the thing I'm challenging myself as I'm making this presentation. It's like, well, this doesn't seem like, because it just says right here, it says, and the lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord Jesus will kill with the breath of his mouth. I mean, if you read that, as soon as he's revealed at the halfway point, there he is, Jesus goes, boom, he's dead. It's like, well, no, he reveals himself, and then he has 3.5 years that God gives him permission to do a variety of things, and then Jesus is going to come back. Well, he's going to end quickly, but it may not be, you know, 3 minutes. It may not just be while he's mowing his yard, he melts like the wicked witch of the West. It may be a series of battles. Okay, so again, I'm telling that to judge my own teaching. The coming of the lawless one is by the activity of Satan with all power and false signs and wonders and with all wicked deception for those who are perishing because they refuse to love the truth and so be saved. So people refuse the truth. God will eventually just give them a deception. There's a great deception coming because the truth is going to be rejected. God says, okay, we're going to close the truth up and here, just believe the false lie. And it's like, it's going to lead them to destruction. Therefore, God sends them a strong delusion so that they may believe what is false in order that that all may be condemned who did not believe the truth but had pleasure in unrighteousness. So rejecting the truth is connected with desiring to be unrighteous. And you reject the truth, not just to reject the truth, not because the concept in this verse is you don't just reject the truth because you're so academically brilliant. You reject the truth because you're so depraved and you want to do unrighteousness. And so I want to do this, so I can't accept that. And so I'm going to have to come up with an academic system, a philosophical system that will make it appear that I've defeated that, so I've got permission from all of you to go behave this way. So you're rejecting the truth not because you're so intellectually brilliant. You're rejecting the truth because you do not want to conform to righteousness. It's very clear. That is a teaching of the Bible. We in the Western world, in secular humanism, oh, these academics, they're so smart. They've defeated the possibility of God even existing. They've defeated the possibility that the Bible is the written word of God. They defeated the concept that there's a spiritual dimension. It's like, except as soon as they get depraved, they go right into the spiritual dimension and start worshiping demons and talking to Satan. So it's like, if you're so brilliant, then stay in your atheistic world and just think naturalism. But the thing is, as soon as you get too far to naturalism, where you end up, you've gone full circle, you're into demonism. I mean, that's, you can see that taking place in the public schools, in the public humanistic system. Is there all, we don't accept religion here, but now they're bringing Satan worship in. They're going to introduce people to Satanism. It's like, well, we saw this coming in 1940. We saw this coming in 1960. It's like, this is not, this is exactly what it's about. Okay, that's a huge point right there. Okay. Okay, those are the references to the Lord's second coming, if that makes sense to you. Now, what I want to do is go back to page one, and you can see that map I was referring to. I'm going to go back to where I started. Here's the Dead Sea. Down here is, I don't have very much room here, the Gulf of Aqaba and the Red Sea. This is the Persian Gulf, the Red Sea. Persian Gulf over there. And this is the Gulf of Aqaba right here. These in the Red Sea. Now, here is Petra right here. Remember, from here to here is about 200 miles. You know, it's like 180 miles, about 200 miles from there to there. And this is where the Jews are going to be hiding at Edom. This is the land of Edom. It is a city called Bozra. It is Petra. And again, we spent some time talking about that. This whole area, the land of Jordan, is going to be protected from the Antichrist, according to Jesus, Daniel, even the book of Revelation includes that. And so this is exactly the right place where they won't be able to get to. Now, what I want to do is show you something, and I hope I can pull this off. I took a video when I was in Israel. I was at a place up by just got a notification. Up by in Galilee, and at one of the places they had like a topographical map, probably from here to that wall back there. And I filmed it a couple different directions, kind of like I was like a drone. And then I came home, and then I labeled it. Now, what you're going to see here, and again, I hope you appreciate this. Your first thing you're going to see is the blue water right here, and you're going to be looking this way. So you're going to be able to see this. You're going to be able to see the mountains over here. This is kind of cut off because, I mean, it's just a table. So you can see the mountains of Edom where Petra's at right here. You can see the base of the Dead Sea. There's going to be a little pool of water here and here. And then you can see how steep it drops off down into here. So you can see the valleys and all the water. This is the high point. So all the water here flows this way. Either flows into the Dead Sea or flows down a ravine. It flows this way. Any water on this side flows into the Mediterranean Sea over here. So this is kind of like the ridge. You're going to see hill country in here, down to about Hebron, Beersheba, and then this is going to drop off right here, and it's going to be flat. This is going to be the Negev. This is just the flat wilderness. You'll definitely see that. Then you'll also be able to see the hill country, kind of the mountainous region. And when we say mountains, we're not talking Colorado mountains. We're talking just mountains, you know, high places. They're going to taper down to the hill country here, and then into it's called the Shephela, and then down in here's the plain of the Mediterranean, and here's the Gaza Strip, and you can see I'll label some of the Philistine cities there, and I just kind of move up here. You can see Jerusalem, you'll see how far off this drops, then eventually you'll see the Jezreel Valley, and you can see some of the mountains that are familiar that you hear for. Let's see what happens. Again, this is one of the problems of coming to my Bible study. Is this playing? Oh, look, it's working. Okay, here it is. I'm going to go back to the beginning. This could take, okay, see, Gulf of Aqaba, west, east. There's Petra right there. Dead Sea, see, rising up to Jerusalem, Edom, Jordan. There's the Negev, see, it's flat. It's going to rise up into the hill country. I'll come back and look at it. See, it's going to rise up into the hill country. Mediterranean Sea is over here. Dead Sea. Beersheba, see up here, this is kind of the hill, there's Hebron and Beersheba. I'm going to go back here, watch it drop off. There's the Negev, there's the Philistine city, that's the Gaza Strip. Judean hill country, there's Jerusalem. Qumran, Jericho, right down here, there's the Jordan River. See Jericho? Jerusalem, see that? Jericho, this is over here, is where Sodom's at. Samaria. The main thing is just see the topography of the land. There's Mount Ebal and Gerizim. See right there? That's where Abraham came, Mount Carmel. Jezreel Valley. See the triangle? There's Carmel. This is the Jordan River. They crossed here and went over here to the sea. That's where they'll meet. Mount Tabor. Right there's Nazareth. That's where Jesus, they pushed. We're going to take him out to the edge of town to push him off a cliff. And then there's Sea of Galilee. That's fleeting in. And the Golan Heights. Caesarea Philippi. And then there's Mount Hermon. All right. That went very well. Okay. Hey, was that interesting? Now, yeah. I've got that online, and it just kind of gives a... But now you can see what I've been talking about, that blood would flow all the way down here. You can see that, like, it's almost like it's designed like a drainage system. I mean, it's just everything from here just drains right down here for 200 miles. I mean, you can think of other options, but really, if the slaughter is going to be in this area, all the blood is going to flow here, and it says it's going to flow about a distance of 200 miles. John says that, and this is where it would flow. I mean, unless it's going to do some weird thing. And again, up to a horse's bridle, again, it doesn't mean it's going to be like an ocean. It means it's all going to run in. It's going to be a wadi or a valley running this way, and that's where all the birds are called in to eat this mess up. Okay. Now, with that setting, are there any questions right now? Okay, and you say, no, no, no. Okay, go to page 1 of the notes, point 4. It's Zechariah 13, 7 through 9. It says, 2/3 of the population will die, of the Jewish population. That's in Zechariah. Now, that either is taking place throughout time, and a 1/3 is going to be spared and brought into the tribulation. That's going to take place at 70 AD, and then 1/3 of the Jews were scattered. Or that's going to be a countdown of when this 70th week begins. There's going to be the full number, 3/3 of the Jewish population, but during the tribulation, 2/3 are going to be slaughtered, leaving 1/3 to deal with the return of Christ. Again, and that's discussable on how that breaks down. Okay, turn the page, and there are 5 groups of Jews. I said 4 last week. I put a 5th group in there. There's 5 groups of Jews that can be identified here in the 70th week. One is the apostate Jews of Daniel chapter 9, verse 27, called the many. They're the ones that welcome the Antichrist and sign a treaty with him. I would assume that's the 2/3. That's going to be apparently the 2/3. That's a general saying, but there's going to be the apostate Jews who've rejected Christianity and in a sense have misunderstood their Old Testament and are actually looking for a physical political leader to lead their nation and the world, and they sign up with the Antichrist, as does the whole world. So that's Daniel chapter 9, verse 27. Now that 7-year treaty is broken at the halfway point. Then there's going to be clearly 144,000. Now, if that's part of one of these other groups, that's, again, discussable. But there's clearly 144,000 that are sealed. I think they're going to end up being part of this group down here in Edom. Some people have them then being scattered around the world to evangelize. There's not a verse that says, and they become evangelists. It doesn't say they're sealed to go off and proclaim the gospel. But it doesn't dictate, it just says they're sealed, they're protected. And it it says they don't know a woman. It says they haven't defiled themselves with women. Now, it doesn't mean marriage is bad, but what it means is clearly they're men, and other that they're not married and they have no families. So these are 144,000 military-aged men that have no commitment except to the Lamb, who's on his way back. And so they're hiding here. They're military personnel. They're evangelists. They're special. They're not. And I'm not one of them. I'm married. Got 6 kids. Okay, plus I'm not Jewish. Although you go back to 650 AD, right around there, I got some connection there if I go through Charlemagne. But anyway, that's another story. All right. So that's 144,000. Third group is the other believing Jews who come to faith during the tribulation. There has to be people in the Jewish community that come to recognize Christ. Now, this is not necessarily talking about those who recognize Christ when he returns, but it appears that they come to faith during the tribulation, and so that, you know, they're waiting for the Lord. So there's some that come to faith. How they come to faith, I wrote down the logic, the spirit, the 2 witnesses, possibly previous testimony. Maybe, you know, they find a Generation Word CD somewhere and listen to it. I mean, you know, just, you know, maybe, you know, whatever. You don't know. There's possible for it to come to pass. The 4th group is the faithful remnant. This is the 1/3 that survives. Now, this 1/3 that survives, the faithful remnant, it appears that throughout the tribulation, they have rejected the Antichrist. They do not side with the apostate Jews, but they don't rush over and become a Christian because they're Jews. They've rejected Christianity. So they've rejected the Antichrist, but they haven't accepted Christ. But during this process, this faithful remnant will come to some understanding of who Christ is, and come to Christ. And Isaiah 10, verse 20 through 23, in that day, the remnant of Israel and the survivors of the house of Jacob will no more lean on him who struck them, but will lean on the Lord, the Holy One of Israel in truth. A remnant will return, the remnant of Jacob, to the mighty God. For though your people Israel be as sand of the sea, only a remnant of them will return. Your people are going to be as numerous as the sand of the sea, but two-thirds of them are going to sign a contract with the Antichrist, leaving only a remnant to come into the new covenant. And so that's a reference to this. And then you can see it also, Isaiah chapter 4. I've got other references written down there, Isaiah 37, 31. And the surviving remnant of the house of Judah shall again take root downward and bear fruit upward. For out of Jerusalem shall go a remnant, and out of Mount Zion a band of survivors. Joel chapter 2, you know this verse, Joel chapter 2, verse 30 through 32, and I will show wonders in the heavens and on the earth, blood and fire and columns of smoke. The sun shall be turned to darkness and the moon to blood before the great and awesome day of the Lord comes. And it shall come to pass that everyone who calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved. Now that's a key verse. In these final days as the Lord's returning, everyone who calls on the name of the Lord. All of a sudden, it's like you've been against the Antichrist, you've been against the Lord, you've been searching for truth, and all of a sudden, there he is. It's like, and he's coming back in judgment, and you call on the name of the Lord. What says it right here? And it shall come to pass that everyone who calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved. For in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem, there shall be those who escape. Now that goes back to this right here of in the city right here at the very end. They may not know exactly what's going on, but when things start to come down, when boots hit the ground, they're like, oh my gosh, and they call on the name of the Lord. Well, what's going on? Well, you know, you didn't believe, you didn't get baptized, you didn't join the church, you didn't participate. It's like they call on the name of the Lord. It's like, you're in. They will be saved. It goes on and says, and it's talking, it appears to be talking about Jews, because it says, it doesn't say the nations or around the world. It says, for in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem there shall be those who escape. Remember, they're coming down from, the nations are coming down, and that's where, again, half, it says in Zechariah, half the city will be taken into exile. The women will be raped. They'll be sold into exile, but half the city will not. And then the Lord will return. So it appears the Lord, at that time, he's either coming down the Mount of Olives and walking across, or he's arriving from Edom to join this. But out of that group right there, as the city's being laid, the final days being destroyed, they will be delivered. That's on top of page 3. Jerusalem, there will be, shall be those who escape. Obadiah 7:17. But in Mount Zion there shall be those who escape, and it shall be holy, and the house of Jacob which shall possess their own possession. And then the fifth group kind of ties into this group right here. So some of these are going to be down in Edom, but here's a definite reference to the Jews in Jerusalem, kind of tying back into our own discussion. That's like four and five groups of Jews. They could be very similar. The Jews will be delivered from Jerusalem and flee by the way of the mountain valley formed when the Mount of Olives is split. So when Jesus does return, the Mount of Olives is going to split north to south. There'll be a valley going this way, running right down into the Jordan ravine, the Jordan Valley there. And here it says right here. Then the Lord will go out and fight against those nations as he fights on a day of battle. Now again, on that day, he'll fight against those nations. I think he's fighting against the nations that are where? They assembled here, marched to Jerusalem, and then the Lord will go out and fight against those nations that are in Jerusalem. Not necessarily all around the world, because the nations have all, very clearly, the demons have gone off, it says in Revelation, to gather them to this place, and they march on Jerusalem. Half the city's taken. Then the Lord will go out. Now, does he come down and land on the Mount of Olives and fight? Possibly, except we've got a bunch of verses of him coming up from Edom. So it appears he's here with the Jews and delivers them. And here it is. Then the Lord will go out and fight against those nations as he fights on the day of battle. On that day, his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives. Now again, contradicting myself, it doesn't say on that day his feet will land on the Mount of Olives. If he's here and he marches this way, on that day his feet will stand. Meaning he has made it. He's made it this far in his campaign. The city's been ransacked. His feet will stand on the Mount of Olives, east of Jerusalem, and the Mount of Olives will be split in two, east to west, forming a great valley with half the mountain moving north and half moving south. Then it says, you, the Jews in Jerusalem, will flee by my mountain valley, for it will extend to Azel. You will flee as you fled from the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah. That would be something they could refer to. But they're going to flee this way out of the city, and the Lord is then going to engage in battle with the Antichrist and whatever troops are going to be going on there. Does that make sense so far? Now, we have a ton of verses that I want to read through to put this in context, and I think I've done a fairly good job of laying this out. It now comes point six, and that's page 3, 4, 5, and over to page 6 and into page 7. I'll do as far as I can. But these are verses that I think clearly tie the Jews into Edom. They're going to flee to Edom. They're going to flee to a city called Bozrah, which is Petra today. It's in the mountains there. And the Lord is going to be seen appearing here and then marching this way up to Jerusalem. And the result of the battle from this all the way up here, Revelation says, will be about 200 miles of blood flowing to the horse's height of a horse's bridle. And I think it's all just flowing down this way into the Dead Sea and throughout this. And some topography changes are clearly taking place. We could go in more detail. This whole area, it seems like it's going to be go flat. I talked a little bit about last week, but the city will be broken into three parts. John records the great city will be broken into three parts, and that mountain will be split. Okay, here we go. This is just some evidence that something's going on here in Edom. The Jews are going to be there, and Jesus appears to meet them here. We know he's coming back in the sky. We know he's coming back on the horse. We know he's going to end up on the Mount of Olives. We know he's going to destroy the Antichrist with his glory. But what's the process? Here it is. This is Jesus kind of talking about it himself. Matthew 24, verse 15 through 28. So when you see the abomination of desolation spoken by the prophet Daniel standing in the holy place, let the reader understand, and let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. That's the halfway point. At the halfway point, the Antichrist will set up here in the Temple Mount that he let the Jews worship in. He sets up, he says, when you see that, you flee. It says, those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Now your mountains are here, and your mountains are down to Jericho, into the plain, the Jordan Rift right here, across, up through where Sodom sat, and then up into the mountains of Jordan over here that you could actually see them on a clear day. You can see, well, you can stand on the Dead Sea on this side and see the mountains over here. So this is mountains. This is mountains. So they're apparently flee here or here clearly. Okay, so he tells you, flee in Judea, flee to the mountains. Let the one who is on the housetop not go down and take his take what he has in his house, and let the one who is in the field not turn back to get his coat. And alas, for women who are pregnant and for those who are nursing infants in those days, pray that your flight may not be in winter or on the Sabbath. And the main reason for that is there's no public transportation on the Sabbath, and the winter is going to make the difficult. It's a lot of rain. And when we think winter, we think ice and snow and the roads are closed. That can happen in some sense there, but it's mainly everything is wet. There's the ravines where you're going to be fleeing in, there are rivers. I mean, there's torrents of water just flowing out of here. So it's in the summer, you can walk through them and take pictures and do all kinds of stuff. But in the winter, it's like you're like stepping into a flood season. So it's going to be hard to get across those. So pray that it's not during those times. For then there will be a great tribulation. That's talking about the 3.5 years. And I can read on like that. I don't have anything else underlined. I want to keep moving. So that he tells them to flee to the mountains. Revelation 12, 6 and 13 through 15. We read this last week. This is a vision that John had. The woman fled into the wilderness. If you remember, the woman is clearly Israel. We presented that last week. The 12 stars, the 12 tribes. The moon is Rachel.
We lost your thing, and now we have our TV stuff.
We got a new TV. Did you see we got the stripes are gone? Tony was not happy with our TV because it had those ugly stripes. And so, all right, AirPlay and, but my logo is right there. All right, Now I may not be able to shut it off because I don't know what I'm doing with this. See that? I shut that off all by myself. Talk about techie. But look, it's a little tiny remote. The TV weighed like half of what the other one was. It's like some kind. Okay. My sound person's telling me to get back on track. Okay. Yeah, you didn't come to hear about my new TV. But it did work nice with the video. Okay, here we go. Revelation 12, 6, point B. In Revelation, the woman is Israel. The woman fled into the wilderness. Again, the Negev, wilderness. Where she has a place prepared by God. See, this place is prepared by God. The ravines are there, the mountain place. We talked about it last week. I'm not sure if we talked about it, but Basra has got to get in. There's about a mile of where you can walk or you can ride a horse. Maybe two people can walk stride by side, but you've got to almost go single file or in a small column, walk for about a mile into this area like here. It's all surrounded by mountains. Indiana Jones, he rode his horse through that part right there. It's like a sheepfold. In fact, Basra means sheepfold. You go through here, and there's only one way in and one way out, and once you're in here, you're protected. So it's already, when it says prepared for her, it's there prepared for. I mean, the ravines, the mountains, it's there. So it says, where she has a place prepared for her in which she is to be nourished for 1,260 days. And that's 3.5 years. So Matthew, at the halfway point, when the abomination shows up, flee to the mountains. When you get there, you'll be nourished there for 1,260 days or 3.5 years. I mean, these things are just like overlapping. They're overlays. It's just the same thing. I that's what I'm presenting. You don't have to accept it. But the woman was given the two wings of a great eagle that she might fly from the serpent into the wilderness to the place where she is to be nourished for a time, times, and half a time. And once again, that's 3.5 years. Times 2 years, time 1 year, half a time, half a year. So again, that's Matthew and Revelation saying this. We don't know, you know, it's not saying eat them. Micah chapter 2, verse 12 through 13. I will surely assemble all of you, O Jacob. I will gather the remnant of Israel. I will set them together like sheep in a fold, like a flock in its pasture. A noisy multitude of men. He who opens the breach goes up before them. They break through and pass the gate going out by it. Their king passes on before them, the Lord at the head. So again, then I just write down Basra Petra is in a basin with Mount Seir surrounded by mountains. I just described that. Point two, C2, Basra means sheepfold. So there is they're being gathered as in a sheepfold. Now it doesn't say Edom, but we're describing that setting. Daniel 11, verse 40. The Antichrist will not be able to access Edom, Moab, or Ammon, which is the actual Edom, Moab, and Ammon, which is today Jordan. So Daniel, the angel couldn't tell Daniel. Daniel couldn't write the nation of Jordan because there was no nation of Jordan. So they described the land of Jordan, and this is in Jordan. Edom, Moab, and Ammon. When you put those together right now, that's the land of Jordan today. So it'd be like, you know, I'm trying to think of an example, but I'm sure you understand it. At that time, Daniel chapter 11, verse 40, at the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him. Now, here's the Antichrist fighting some kings during that 70th week. But the king of the north shall rush up on him like a whirlwind with chariots and horsemen and with many ships coming from the Mediterranean Sea. And he shall come into countries and shall overflow and pass through. So the Antichrist is conquering all these countries. These kings can't stand against him. He shall come into the glorious land, the Antichrist, so there's one last land to take, and tens of thousands shall fall. But these shall be delivered out of his hand, Edom and Moab and the main part of the Ammonites. He shall stretch out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. So he'll take Egypt, he'll take all these countries, and then he can't take Jerusalem, and he can't take the land of Jordan. So he gathers the nations here to march down to attack Jerusalem. The Jews are hiding here, and this is where the Lord returns and then marches up for the final engagement here at Jerusalem. Ezekiel chapter 20, verse 33 through 49. Gather Israel during wrath. Okay, during wrath would refer to the last part of the tribulation. Gather, okay, wait, I'm reading my words, I'm sorry. Gather Israel during wrath and bring them into the wilderness. There enter into judgment and remove the rebels. I wrote rebels, it's supposed to be rebels. I will make you pass under the rod like sheep and bring you into the bond of the covenant. Yeah, that's good. They're going to be brought down here, have to pass through that sheep gate, you know, that mile-long narrow pass, pass under the rod, and he'll be checking each sheep to make sure it's his and bring them into the sheepfold. Anyone that's not his will be removed. Now, here is Ezekiel's words. I interpreted it. Now, here's what Ezekiel says. God says, I will bring you into the wilderness of the peoples. Okay, wilderness. And there I will enter into judgment with you face to face. So they're fleeing the Antichrist only to meet the Lord down here where he's going to now, everyone's going to flee, but not everyone's going to be a believer. Some of them are rebels against him. They're fleeing for their lives down here. Well, you're not welcome here because only my sheep get to come into my fold. And there I will enter into judgment with you face to face. As I entered into judgment with your fathers in the wilderness of the land of Egypt, so I will enter into judgment with you, declares the Lord God. I will make you pass under the rod, and I will bring you into the bond of the covenant. I will purge out the rebels. So as they're entering into Bozrah, if this is accurate, if they're coming in, they're going to have to go through that channel into the sheepfold, and they'll pass under the rod of the shepherd, who will then be evaluating each of the sheep if they're his or not, and if they are, they get to come in. But those that are not are going to be rebels. They'll be purged out of the camp. And that's Ezekiel talking about that right there. Now, you can spiritualize that. You can talk about, you know, how that applies to the church, and that's all true. There's application. But if you put this in the context of this event, you can see how that's actually taking place. Isaiah 34, the Lord returns at Edom. Now, this is the Lord returning to Edom. Now, again, these are not necessarily chronological event or chronological. Draw near, O nations, to hear and give attention, O peoples. Let the earth hear and all that fills it. This is Isaiah 34, verse 1 through 7. The world and all that comes from it, for the Lord is enraged against all the nations and furious against all their host. That'd be interesting. The nations and their hosts, is that their angelic host? He has devoted them to destruction, has given them over to the slaughter, which we're about to see. Their slain shall be cast out, and the stench of their corpses shall rise, thus the need for the birds. The mountains shall flow with their blood. And then here's these would be the mountains right here. Remember, we saw the hill country here. This is hill country rising in the mountains of Israel. And then it's going to flow. The mountains shall flow with their blood. All the hosts of heaven, this would be angelic hosts, demonic hosts, rebels against God, shall rot away, and the skies roll up like a scroll. All their hosts shall fall as leaves from the vine, like leaves falling from the fig. Because when the Lord returns into the atmosphere, the rulers and authorities in the air are cast to the earth. Satan's already sent them to the earth to help fight against Israel, but even Satan is going to lose his place, it says. And all they are going to fall like fig trees out of the heavens, again, not heaven in the throne of God, but the atmospheric heaven. For my sword, this is interesting, for my sword has drunk its fill in the heavens. Behold, it descends for judgment upon Edom. So when the Lord returns, if you're going to go with what I'm teaching here, at the sixth seal, the Lord returns, the stars of the heavens disappear because the Lord's glory is there, the nations run and hide, hide us from him who sits on the throne, and at that point, the Lord's sword drinks its fill in the heavens. All the rulers and authorities, including Satan, are cast down to the earth, and now, he says, from that point now he's appeared, he will descend on Edom. Now, again, read on here. The Lord will descend upon Edom, upon the people. I have devoted to destruction. The Lord has a sword. It is sated with blood. It is gorged with fat, with the blood of lambs and goats, with the fat of the kidneys of rams. For the Lord has a sacrifice in Bozrah, great slaughter in the land of Edom. Now, who are the rams and the goats and the sheep that are being slaughtered? If we put this in context, it could be the whole nation of Edom. They're rebels and they're not believers, and they're going under some judgment in the Old Testament. Or in this case, they're all the sheep that fled here of Israel are fleeing down here for protection from the Antichrist. The Lord descends on Edom for judgment. Wait, welcome to my sheepfold. Pass under my rod, like Ezekiel says. And he says very clearly he'll remove the rebels. And that's the rams, the goats, the false sheep are driven out. The other sheep, the believing sheep, come in and enter into the covenant. Now, what covenant? We talked about that before. It can't be the Mosaic covenant because they're already in the Mosaic covenant. They're coming into the new covenant that the church is in that Jesus instituted according to Jeremiah 31. For the Lord has a sacrifice in Bozrah, and this would be the unbelievers, great slaughter in the land of Edom. Okay, again, that's that context. Isaiah 63, the Lord, there you saw the Lord come down at Edom. Now in Isaiah 63, you're going to see the Lord leave Edom. Here he's come down, met his sheep, let them come into the fold. They fled the Antichrist. The rebels have been removed. Now from here, well, let me read it. Who is this? Isaiah 63, verse 1 through 6, we've read it before. Who is this who comes from Edom in crimson garments from Bozrah? He who is splendid in his appeal, marching in the greatness of his strength. It is I, speaking in righteousness, mighty to save. Now, this is clearly talking about the Messiah. In Isaiah, I said it before, in Isaiah 53, that the great verse about the Messiah, he had no glory or majesty, no splendor, hadar is the Hebrew word, that would attract us. So Isaiah was saying, when he comes, he'll be sacrificed as a sheep. He'll take your sins. He'll pay for your iniquities. But when he comes, it says, why didn't we recognize him? It said, because he had no splendor. He didn't look like God. He looked like the seed of the woman. He looked like a man, but he had no splendor. So he went to his death. They reject him, and he did the work of salvation. Well, now, 10 chapters later, the same word is used here. It says, who is this who comes from Edom in crimson garments, meaning blood, bloody garments, from Bozrah, from Edom, from Bozrah, his garments are red from blood. He who is splendid in his apparel. So in other words, he is striding forth in glory. He is splendid. He's got the hadar. It's like, who is this? It's like the glory of God. Who is this coming out of? It looks like God himself. The one we didn't recognize in Isaiah 53, we recognize him now. He says, it is I, speaking in righteousness, I've come to save. Why is your apparel red and your garments like those who tread the winepress? What? Again, winepress, the wrath of the winepress, the wrath of the gathering of the grapes. Why is your apparel red like the garments of like those treading the winepress? I have trodden the winepress alone, and from the peoples no one was with me. In other words, the winepress would mean the judgment of the nations, and the peoples, none of the nations were with him, meaning he didn't come and these are the nations that sided with him. All the nations have joined the Antichrist to destroy Jerusalem, so he's coming. Now it appears they've got this battle going here, but some of the troops of the nation, including the Antichrist, have gone down here in pursuit of Israel, and as he comes out of here, he's starting the slaughter and fight his way back to Jerusalem. It says, I have trodden the winepress alone, and from the peoples no one was with me. I trod them in my anger, trampled them in my wrath, their lifeblood spattered on my garments and stained all my apparel. So it's pretty clear why his garments are red. It's not the cross, the sacrificial blood of the cross. It's I'm trampling the nations, and I keep crushing these people. I get blood all over myself. What a mess. Call the birds. Because with the Lord, he's not killing a few people. He's killing thousands, slaughtering them. I mean, we need birds to come here and clean this mess up. We need the garbage system. For the day of vengeance was in my heart, and my year of redemption had come. I looked, but there was no one to help. Again, that's interesting. No one to help. Is that referring to the nations? I was appalled, but there was no one to uphold. So my own arm brought me salvation, and my wrath upheld me. So his arm worked salvation. Well, how did you keep going? My own wrath kept me going. I trampled down the peoples in my anger. I made them drunk in my wrath and poured out their lifeblood on the ground. Thus again, the need for the birds. Habakkuk chapter 3. verse 3. The Lord comes from Teman, Mount Paran, in the same mount. Okay, I'm sorry, that's my words. The Lord comes from, this is the same mountain range right here. This Edom, Bozrah, Petra is in the Paran mountain range. So it says here, I'll read what Habakkuk wrote. It says, God came from Teman, the Holy One from Mount Paran, Selah. His splendor covered the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise. So again, that includes the heavens and the earth. Now, some of these verses, remember, Israel is in the wilderness in this area. So some of these verses, the book of Judges talks about it, the Lord has already come from this area when he brought Israel up on this side, and then they crossed in over here. So the Lord's already spent 40 years with his people in this general area. It's just interesting. All right. And that's where Judges 5, verse 4 is at. Let's go to J. Two more verses here very quickly, very quickly. All right, here we go, and then we're done. Revelation 16, verse 17 through 21. The seventh angel poured out his bowl into the air, and a loud voice came out of the temple from the throne, saying, "It is done." And there were flashes of lightning, rumblings, peals of thunder, and a great earthquake, such as there never has been since man was on the earth. So great was that earthquake. The great city split into three parts. This is when, I think, the same thing when the Mount of Olives splits north to south, the city of Jerusalem split, the great city splits into three parts. I think it's the same earthquake. The great city was split into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell all around the world. The other cities fall, and God remembered Babylon the Great to make her drain the cup of the wine of his fury of his wrath, and every island fled away, and no mountains were to be found, and great hailstones about 100 pounds each fell from heaven on people, and they cursed God for the plague of hail because the plagues were so severe. So notice, in all this, there's still time to curse God. So it's not like everybody just dies. It's like they're fleeing from this invasion. The earth is revolting against them. It's under God's control. And they're in this situation, they're still cursing God. Some cry out for help. Some curse him. Anyone who calls on the name of the Lord, Acts chapter 2, quoting Joel, in the day of the Lord, they will be saved. But these people, they're cursing God. I mean, there's some are going to be like, oh my God. They'll recognize the one who they pierced, and they'll call on him for help. Welcome. Others see him and curse him. Can you even imagine? I mean, that's what's taking place. One last verse, Zechariah 14. Behold, the day is coming for the Lord when the spoil taken from you will be divided in your midst. For I will gather all the nations against Jerusalem to battle. And the city shall be taken, and the houses plundered, and the women raped. Now, this is exactly, that's what we're talking about right here. Half the city shall go into exile, but the rest of the people shall not be cut off from the city. See, the Lord is coming up here. There's Jews with him here, but there's still Jews in the city. Then the Lord will go out and fight against those nations as he fights on the day of battle. On that day, his feet shall stand on the Mount of Olives. See right there? That's right. He's going to make progress all the way up to here. Boom, the city splits, the mountain splits, he's here, ready to engage in battle. That lies, on his day, his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives that lies before Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives shall be split in two from east to west by the very wide valley, so that one half of the mountain shall move northward, the other half will move southward, and you shall flee to the valley by my mountains, for your valley of my mountains, for the valley of the mountains shall reach Azel, and goes all the way through there. And then we've got other verses all the way through here. And I think, well, I hate to do this again, but I do want to pick up, because when he gets right here, and we've talked about it, but I want to read the verses, and I'll have to think about it. We'll talk after class. But then from right here, in the Kidron Valley, we looked at that last week, some pictures of it, that's where he then enters into judgment of anyone there and executes deliverance for the Jews and those who are believers, but also, and welcomes them into his kingdom, but also executes all the rebels. So there's that coming together. We've got to pray. If you got any questions, please feel free to ask them. Otherwise, as soon as I pray, just stand up and rush out of here before the conversations begin. Father, we do thank you again for the chance to look into these things. We thank you for the hope that we have in Jesus Christ, that he is the victorious Savior and the victorious warrior who's going to bring deliverance. We ask that we may live a life of righteousness, at this time in history, doing the things you've called us to do, that we would not just be waiting for your return, but we would be leading others to understand your glory and the hope that they can have in Jesus Christ and his work of salvation. And in his name we pray, amen. Thank you for being here.